Wake everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 877-44-TRUTH or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Welcome to Call to Action. It is Theology Thursday, as it is every week, here on the campus of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary with our friends here. And every week, we always get to go down a different road. And today, we're going down a road. I don't often quote former President Bill Clinton, but I can quote him on this one when I say, "I feel your pain," when it comes to adolescent boys and raising these adolescent boys. We think of them as boys, but they're young men, and trying to raise them to become young adults and capable of maintaining their own lives. But if you have noticed, if you're a parent of young boys or young men, it is not the easiest thing in the world. And as Dr. Tate Cockrell, my guest today, says, those teens, they want absolute freedom, and us parents, we want absolute control. And that doesn't exactly sound like a match made in heaven. Dr. Tate Cockrell, Associate Professor of Counseling and Assistant Director of Doctor of Ministry Program here at Southeastern. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Steve. Doing great. Always a joy to be with you.
So this isn't theoretical for you either. Because you have a couple of boys in your house, I think.
Yes, sir. It is not theoretical for me at all. I have twin 15-year-old boys. They'll be 16 in November. Yeah, I think what God knew ultimately was is that he didn't want me to just have my daughter alone, who's 23, and who was, of course, the apple of my eye and an angel, and always did everything right. And it was so easy to do parenting conferences whenever I only had my daughter, because I could say, hey, if you do these things, then it always produces these results. And then I had my boys, and it was like, where did all of my awesome parenting principles go that I knew yes. so well that were going to, you know, produce these desired results right. every single time? Yeah, right. It's going to be a piece of cake. I'm going to do this, they're going to do that, and it's going to work out the same way every single time.
It didn't exactly turn out that way. I think that one of the most important things we need to understand right from the get-go, Dr. Cockrell, is what's going on with these young men. Let's define adolescence. What years are we saying that is? And what's going on with them just in their changes, their body, their mind, spiritually, physically, and mentally?
So if we just define it in terms of age, then we're going to be looking at probably on the low end, around 11. That's probably going to be on the low end. Most of the time we say 12, 11 to 12. And on the high end, we're really pushing 30. That number just continues to rise, it seems like, every year that goes by.
That's scary. That's a whole other subject.
I know. We just keep raising the limit more and more. So, you know, that's kind of what we're talking about in terms of age. But, you know, Steve, if I could just kind of maybe just put like one statement out there in terms of what's going on, you know, physiologically, maybe with adolescent boys, is I describe it this way. They're in kind of a form of chemical madness, right? I mean, they've got overdeveloped bodies, they've got underdeveloped brains, and they've got, you know, brain chemistry and hormones that are kicking in. That honestly is creating what I say in parenting conference all the time is that teenagers are all just a little bit brain damaged, right? And it's a funny thing to say, but in all honesty, when you have the ability to do when you've got the ability to do something,
sure,
but not the ability to control whether or not you do that something,
right.
It can be really, really dangerous. You know, journalist G.K. Chesterton said this: boyhood is a most complex and incomprehensible thing. Even when one has been through it, one does not understand what it was. So we get to the other side of adolescence as boys, and we just kind of wake up one day and say, what was that?
Yeah.
what in the world was that?
And it was with some of – we have two sons, and our oldest is 23. Our younger son is 17. And every once in a while when I'm sober-minded, I remember displaying some of the same – frustrating behaviors that they'll display, whether they're choosing to just kind of remain angry or whatever it is. If I stop and think back, I'll be like, you know what? I think I did a lot of that stuff too. So it's pretty normal. It's important that we remember this is really the norm, these types of challenges.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't necessarily excuse behavior when our boys push back on us,
sure.
if they're disobedient or they're disrespectful. But I think if we can move from a position where rather than being angry all the time, we're more empathetic because we try to remember what it was like to be an adolescent boy and the challenges that they're facing and what's going on with, you know, their bones are hurting because they're growing and they're, you know, I know you've faced this because you've got sons. I mean, they eat like horses. And,
oh, yeah. It's
crazy. You know, I mean, I keep saying we're going to have to take out a loan just to pay for groceries, you know, around our house. You know, they're eating like crazy and their hormones are growing crazy. And, of course, they're starting to get attracted to girls and they don't really necessarily know what to do with that. And they're facing some challenges that you and I didn't face whenever they were.
Yeah,
our age.
They've got so much information coming at them.
That's right.
Which only complicates and muddies the water all the more. And going back to the realities of that they're all kind of just a little bit insane. I would assume that's probably not a good parenting approach in empathizing with our sons to say, hey, listen, you don't have a clue what you're going through right now. You're crazy. You're all messed up. We need to know that.
That's right.
But we probably shouldn't share that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. We don't want to make the problem worse, you know, by accusing them of being stupid or crazy or, you know, I say this all the time, like oftentimes whenever we ask our kids, like, what in the world were you thinking? Well, they weren't, right?
Right.
I mean, that's one of the signs of the times of them being the age that they are. And so sometimes pointing that out in that way isn't the most helpful. But if we can have a discussion with them and just say, hey, I remember whenever I was your age, I struggled with some of the same kinds of things. Yeah. I know sometimes I did things and after the fact I was like, what was that? Or why did I do that?
Sure.
And so sometimes you may not even realize the reason why you did it. But let's talk through it, not let's argue about it or, you know, do the thing that we, you know, the knee-jerk reaction as parents where we just threaten our kids and, you know, they go storming off to their room and, you know, and then, you know, we freak out. And that's just not helpful to anybody.
Yeah, and so understanding what they're going through and what a challenge that is for them mentally, physically, emotionally, physiologically, even spiritually. And you mentioned this too, but just briefly, we need to, it sounds like a big part of this in order to try to find some peace in our homes with our adolescent sons is that we have to get our expectations in the right place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. If we expect them, you know, I'll just use myself as an example. If I expect my boys to behave in situations the same way that my daughter did, I'm setting myself up for failure. You know, I'm setting myself up for failure and forcing them to do things that is against really who they are. In many ways, it's against the fundamental nature of the way God has created them. God created them to be warriors and providers and protectors and active and aggressive and not aggressive like in a bad way, but just aggressive in terms of their assertiveness. Like God has inbred in our boys the desire to want to do that. I even just think about Jesus. You know, he goes into the temple. His parents are going back to their hometown, and, you know, a couple of days pass. They go back. They pick him up, and, you know, they're like, well, where were you? And he's like, I was about my father's business, right? I mean, even at 12, he's pulling away from his parents. I mean, Jesus gives us an example of that, you know?
I mean, think in some versions, it even says, didn't you know?
Didn't you know? Yeah, that's exactly right.
A little mouthy to us. We'll be right back with Dr. Dave Calvin right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And one of my favorite guests when we have an opportunity to get him in here is Dr. Tate Cockrell, who is just an excellent Christian counselor. He's been a great blessing to our family personally, but also here at the seminary, Associate Professor of Counseling, Assistant Director of the Doctor of Ministry Program. And how long, Tate, have you been counseling?
I have been counseling for, this is 2018, so 21 years.
Wow. So 21 years, and I think last time you told me it was over 20,000 hours.
It's a little over. It's probably over 25,000. Yeah,
are you a hard guy to live with?
I'm not most of the time. Most of the time, I'm not. Although I have been told a few times by my wife, I'm not one of your clients. So sometimes when I sometimes when I try to put the counseling judo on her, she recognizes it for what it is and says,
she's,
you know.
I'm not a mile away.
I'm not on your couch. We're not in your office. So back off, buddy.
What a great point. We're talking today about adolescent boys, young men, our sons, and what a challenge that can be for all of us, whether you're a father or a mother, maybe a single mother or even a single dad. This is a very challenging subject, and I've been down this road myself. Tate has twin boys that are 15. I have a 17-year-old who happens to be 6'5". I'm about 6'1", so he's bigger than me, too. And then a 23-year-old who's out of the house now, but I've been down these roads as well. So we're walking through a lot of different ground here and talking about a lot of important things. You were talking about kind of the – we're kind of getting our expectations correct and accurate. And you were talking about the fact that these young men are becoming more aggressive, that they are aggressive. They're hunter-gatherers, if you want to use that phraseology. They're designed to be leaders and leaders in the home. And oftentimes that can cause a lot of challenges. And so speak, Tate, to dealing with the aggressiveness that's really emerging in our sons, and especially with respect to that aggressiveness when it comes out towards a mom and then when it comes out towards a dad.
Yeah, that's a great point, Steve. So, you know, it is naturally inborn in them from, I think, from birth because of the creative, you know, the creativeness of God. I think he just designed them to be that way. You know, you don't have to teach a boy to like trucks or to go break something. I mean, it just happens, right? I mean, they just tend to tear stuff up.
Yeah.
And they do it because of that aggressive nature that's been built into them. And we don't want to crush that, but we do want to help them manage that. We want to help them understand that there are appropriate times and places for that, and there are inappropriate times and places. Like my boys, they hate this phrase. I say it all the time. I just look at them and say, time and place, time and place, time and place. And they know that what that means is there's an appropriate time and place and not appropriate time and place. So in relation to like pushing back against their mom, for instance, that's not an appropriate time and place. Like you want to push back. I'm a guy in the house. You know, both of you guys are guys in the house. You want to be aggressive. We want to wrestle. You know, you want to kind of talk back a little bit and us mix it up. I mean, I'll allow a certain amount of that. When they do it to their mom,
yeah.
I don't even let my wife step into that. Like I step in, and usually how I say it is, you're not going to disrespect my wife that way.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. And yeah. I know that we've talked about this before. When a father sees his son or sons kind of being too aggressive towards their mom, disrespectful,
yep.
Should we – it's a language change.
It
but
is.
I've seen it have kind of almost dramatic
yep.
effects in our house. I don't know if that's positive or negative, but – to say, don't talk to your mom that way versus I'm not going to allow you to talk to my wife that way.
Right.
Those are two very different statements.
They are two very different statements. And Steve, the reason that we changed that language, I don't know the reason why you changed yours the way to do it the way you do, but I feel like it's probably for similar reasons of why I do it. And that is, that's real world. Like if they're out in public and they talk to a woman that way, who they're going to encounter is a husband or a son or a dad or a, you know, somebody's likely to
yeah.
confront them and say, you know, you're not going to talk to my wife, my friend, my daughter, my mother, my whoever it is in that way. And so I want them to understand the real world complications of them doing what they're doing. Along with the fact of, I think, saying it that way elevates what I call the spousal priority in the home, which is I want my boys to know the most important relationship in this family is a relationship between your mom and I. Because one day, according to Genesis 2, you guys are going to be out of our house.
Right.
And so I want you to know that this is my wife. You're going to be reminded of that. And though you may think it's okay to disrespect your mom, it's not okay to disrespect my wife. And so we're going to draw the line there. Like,
yeah.
you're not going to do that.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's also, isn't that also setting for them a leadership example later
right.
in life?
That's right.
That they should take on that role as well.
That's exactly
protecting
right.
Protecting their wife. And unfortunately, sometimes from your own kids, at least in terms of attitude and the way they talk. Well, you know, we've been talking about that we have to understand what a topsy-turvy period this is for our young sons, that there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of changes, a lot of turmoil that you can expect. So I think we adjust our own attitudes towards that.
Yeah.
And then should we, in terms of how we engage, is this the time, Tate, that raising my voice might have worked well when they were younger? But once they become teenagers, I've found personally that actually ends up making it worse.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, Steve, just from a very practical standpoint, I find it much more effective for me to lower my voice. I tend to talk quieter. I tend to kind of take a step back. Again, boys, as they're trying to figure out that aggressiveness, usually in the beginning, as they're trying to sort through all of that, they tend to meet aggression with aggression. So if I come back more aggressive than they are,
yeah.
their natural tendency is going to be to try to one-up me. So rather than doing that, I just try to simply lower my voice. That doesn't mean I do it perfectly. Sometimes I get in there with them and we mix it up. But I'm smart enough to know that the best way to handle that, take a step back. Now, I'm still firm. It's not that I'm being weak. It's
right.
not that I'm being passive. I'm still going to be direct. You can be direct and firm and assertive and not be a yeller, screamer, you know, like I'm going to overpower you. That just tends not to work with boys.
Because isn't that the message we're sending? We're engaging that aggressiveness that's there, that God placed there. It lacks self-control, lacks maturity.
Right.
And so when we kind of bow up against it,
right,
it tends to just make it worse.
Yeah, it does. And it tends to, if we want to say, not only do as I say, but do as I do. It doesn't make any sense to yell at your kids across the room. Stop yelling as you're yelling at them.
Is there ever a time to yell?
I don't know that there's ever a time to yell.
I mean, if there's danger.
Oh,
obviously.
sure. Yeah, like if I've just absolutely got to shock them into something. But I just find that probably, let's say 95% of the time, it's going to be the least effective way for us to be able to communicate with our boys.
So the same is true of mothers, I would assume.
Right.
So even though they get frustrated and understandably so, a mom should. So that's both moms and dads. We need to take the high road on this one and maintain our stability and maintain calmness.
That's right. And moms sometimes, Steve, can take this especially personal. You know, it's no secret dads tend to have really great relationships with their daughters. Moms tend to have really great relationships with their sons. And sometimes as those boys are disrespecting and they're being aggressive, I mean, sometimes they really struggle with that. And so they can become impulsive and they can try to overpower or try to speak over it. Again, it's just not helpful for
them. Yeah, we're talking to Dr. Tate Cockrell today on Theology Thursday here on the Steve Noble Show. By the way, go to their website. There's so many different things that you can access at Southeastern. It's sebts.edu. Throw a little / and then radio in there, and you'll see all the online options as well. So it doesn't matter whether you live here in North Carolina or not. But talking to Dr. Tate Cockrell today about raising adolescent boys, what are some of the things that he deals with in a counseling situation? Because a lot of us probably can relate to that as well. We'll ask him that when you come back. Today, talking about a tough subject, I think, for anybody that has sons. And if your sons are under 10, well, you need to praise the Lord today that you're hearing the show before they become teenagers adolescents. If they're past that age, well, you've got probably grandparenting, and there's going to be wisdom here that you can use. But especially if you're going into that period, if you're in it right now, Tate is. He's got twin 15-year-old sons. I have a 17-year-old son. I'm almost 6'1". My 17-year-old's 6'5". And then our oldest son is 23 out of the house. But a lot of these things applied to him as well as we walk through kind of how do you parent, how do you deal with the challenges of raising these young men. And with all that time that you've spent in counseling, Tate, I'm sure you've run into a lot of situations, families and young men that come in. What are some of the most common challenges that you're running into practically in counseling with these adolescent boys?
Yeah, so I'll just name a few of them that are pretty common for me in counseling. One is, you know, just behavioral issues in the home. So parents struggling with how to adapt to that. So you know, they're being disrespectful, they're being disobedient, they're, you know, not doing what their parents are telling them. And kind of your quote earlier in the show, you know, every teenage problem oftentimes goes back to the one fundamental problem of a teen's desire for total freedom, a parent's desire for total control. They're not navigating that well. That's a pretty common one. Identity seems to be a really, really big one for adolescent boys.
What do you mean by identity?
Man, they're really trying to struggle with who am I? You know, how am I going to be known to my friends, my peers, my family? Many, many boys, they'll shop for an identity for, you know, several years. You know, they'll be a jock and a preppy and the bad kid and the good Christian kid. And, you know, they're just trying to figure out how am I going to be known? And they're looking for something that they can feel comfortable with. They're looking for something that will alleviate the pressure and stress that they're feeling from this kind of chemical madness that they're going through, right? So sometimes they think, well, maybe if I try another identity, maybe this will work out better for me, right? And so it's not uncommon for us to see adolescent boys go through multiple identities during this adolescent phase. It's a very, very common thing.
How does that show up for us as parents, as fathers and mothers? How does that kind of manifest itself and the challenges of that in the home, in our relationship?
Well, certainly whenever an adolescent starts to adopt an identity that we would think would be contrary to who we are as parents or who we are in the faith as believers, if we're not careful, we'll panic about that. You know, we swoop in too quickly and, you know, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. And of course, when we do that,
right,
that then just makes them, you know, entrench even more.
Because again, they want total freedom, and we want total control.
That's exactly right. And so now they've really tapped into the button. Like, they've really pushed the button of, oh, this is where I can show that I'm independent. Yeah. This is where I can show that I'm different. And so I found in a lot of—
And that's where they'll take an opposing stand just to establish—
You better believe
freedom.
It. You better believe it. Wow. Sometimes they won't even be as committed to what they're saying as they really are. The only reason they're committed to it is because you're on the other side of the issue. Yeah. And they
may put up a front.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly
you
right.
You better believe
exactly
it.
What I think. But you peel that back in their heart or in their head and their soul. Not so much.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the reason why, as parents, we sometimes freak out after we have these massive arguments, only then to learn, like, 3 days later that the kid's forgotten about it, moved on, and doing something entirely different. And you're like, wait a minute. Like, he was willing to die on that hill 3 days ago. Yeah. Like, why? I mean, and now he's just moved on to something else. And, like, we've gotten all worked up about it. And the whole reason was—
Yeah, they hate something on Monday. They love it on Wednesday. They don't care on Friday.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And, again, that goes back to our expectations, realizing, hey, listen, if I'm going to take my little dinghy and I'm going to go out into the ocean and there's a storm out there that's going to last for 5, 6, or 7 years, I shouldn't expect that the waves aren't going to beat me up.
That's right.
I should know there's going to be ups and downs. There might be a lull here and there. I should really praise the Lord for that.
That's right.
But again, our expectations need to be realistic.
I think as parents, if we don't adopt that mentality that says, listen, parenting an adolescent boy or girl, but certainly parenting an adolescent boy is going to come with some bumps and bruises.
Yeah.
And we don't need to be surprised by that. We need to anticipate that. When it happens, we don't need to celebrate it, but we need to say, okay, here's one of those times.
Yeah.
This doesn't feel great, but we're gonna rock and roll on through it. And I'm not just going to be like, the world is falling because this thing has happened, when really it's pretty much happened to every other family that's raised an adolescent boy in the history of humanity.
I'm tempted to die on just about every hill.
Yeah, right.
Because, again, that aggressiveness, their aggressiveness comes up against my— – again, we're back to the Lion King thing. And my natural reaction is, well, I'm going to bow up against you, which just inflames their struggling for freedom and independence.
That's right.
And they bow back. And so the next thing we have is no peace. And, of course, the book of James explains that perfectly. Why do you fight and quarrel? Because you don't get what you want.
Yeah.
I want control. They want freedom. And that's a problem.
You know, I don't want to be like the, you know, this is going to be me being super encouraging. And you can hear the kind of a little bit of sarcasm there in my voice. Like, I'm the bearer of good news here as I say this. But the reality is, for every parent of an adolescent boy out there, they just need to remember this, and that is, at some point during their adolescence, they're going to be the worst version of themselves.
Wow.
I mean, that's just true.
Just
go ahead and accept it. At some point during their adolescence, they are going to be the worst version of themselves, and that is true for every single one of us who are men. They're going to grow up, and it's our job to shepherd them. And if we can anticipate that, as parents, then we can help them struggle through those identity issues. We can help them struggle through, you know, depression or anxiety that they feel from social situations.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't even touched on this, you know, what's called the invisible audience that adolescent boys and girls go through, where, you know, they feel like they're on a stage, right?
Yeah.
This is called the spotlight effect, and where, you know, they're 15, 16 years old, and they just feel like everybody's looking at them, evaluating them, judging them all the time.
And now you add social media into that.
Good night, which we didn't have.
No, we
didn't have that. And so now not only is everybody watching me, but everybody's watching everything I tweet.
And judging maybe even, instantaneously.
And that's exactly right.
Wow.
That's exactly right.
It sounds to me, would you say what are some of the biggest commonalities in the parents when you're counseling teenage boys, adolescent boys, and their parents? What are some of the most common mistakes that we make as parents?
We overparent adolescent boys. We don't allow them to launch. That's probably the most common thing. You know, we helicopter parent. We swoop in, try to rescue them from every bad decision. We try to rescue them from ever failing so they don't learn well. We don't allow our boys to suffer. We don't allow them to learn how to deal with suffering because we think it's our job just to prevent every bad thing that's ever going to happen to them. A guy out at J.H. Ranch years ago had this quote, and I think it's such a great one. He says, you know, a man becomes successful through hard work and adversity, and with his hard work and success, he banishes from his kids' lives the very things that made him successful.
Wow.
And it's just such a powerful reminder that man, don't make the mistake. I mean, you want your kids to make their mistakes while they're in your home, while the guardrails are up, while the bumpers are up. Let's let them make those mistakes now. And don't put so much pressure on them. I say to parents all the time, man, find ways of saying yes to your kid. Well, find ways of saying yes to your adolescent boy. I mean, if everything's important, Steve, nothing's important.
Right, right. And you've made that point, and as we've talked about parenting and stuff in the past, that what was that equation? For every negative thing we say,
at least seven. You got to say at least seven positives for every one negative thing.
And I would think, if we're all being honest, that we probably, most of us, reverse that.
Everything's a correction. Everything's a correction. Everything's a correction. You know, Robert Lewis says in his book, The Quest for Authentic Manhood, every boy needs to hear his dad say, I love you, I'm proud of you, and you're good at something. And so, man, strive to say those three things to your boy every single week. I mean, don't let that – if you do that, it'll make up for an awful lot of negative that comes his way. And I think what you have to remember is that oftentimes adolescent boys don't know how to process their own emotions. And so I think a lot of times what looks like deflection and them pushing it away, that doesn't mean they don't hear it, and it doesn't
mean
they
don't accept it. So whether they respond well to it or not, keep doing it.
That's right. Whether they respond.
Even if you've never done it before.
That's exactly right. Keep doing it regardless, because I can promise you when the chips are down and when that young man doesn't know where to turn, he's going to remember the voice of a mom and a dad who said, I love you, I'm proud of you, and you're good at something.
That's so powerful. What about school?
Unfortunately, Steve, and I hate to rail on the educational system, but it's just not designed for the adolescent boy in mind, right? Most educational systems are designed for the educational girl in mind. You know, sit in straight rows, be quiet, don't talk, you know, don't ask questions, don't move around. And the reality is most adolescent boys are kinesthetic learners, which means they learn by moving and they learn by touching and they learn by exploration. And the American educational system, by and large, public education system is not set up that way. So we got to help our boys understand that. We got to help them understand that even though they're wired one way, that they've got to learn how to operate within the bounds of a system, which means that whenever they get home from school, we got to give them opportunities that they didn't have during school. Yeah. We got to give them opportunities to release energy, be aggressive.
Don't sit down immediately and expect an hour of school.
Yeah, walk in, do your homework, you know, don't watch TV, don't do this, don't do that. We've got to allow them to get rid of some of that.
Yeah.
If we want them to be successful in school. And you ask about things that that parents do wrong. This is one of those that's very common with parents, where they suddenly begin to take more ownership of their son's homework and schoolwork than what they should, and then he doesn't learn the natural consequences of that. I tell parents all the time, don't freak out over one bad grade, one missed something, one not done well homework assignment. Teach your son to manage his own life for himself. Yeah. And if he misses an assignment but still makes an A in the class, that's okay.
Such a huge point. We're talking to Dr. Tate Cockrell today on Theology Thursday, talking about raising adolescent boys from a Christian perspective. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today, Theology Thursday, with our good friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And today, one of my good friends here, who's been just a wonderful guest on the show, a great blessing to the Noble family, Dr. Tate Cockrell, Associate Professor of Counseling, Assistant Director of the Doctor of Ministry Program here at Southeastern Baptist, and has been counseling for years and years and years, over 20,000 hours of counseling experience. And we're talking about adolescent boys today. He can feel my pain. I can feel his pain. He's got twin 15-year-old boys. At least mine are split up. I've got a 17-year-old who's 6'5", which brings a whole physicality to the challenges that already exist. And then our oldest son, praise the Lord, we survived, is 23. He's out on his own living in Florida. So we made it through that one. We're in the middle of working through with our other son. And these are challenging times when they're adolescent. Of course, when we were talking originally, Tate, we were kind of laughing because I was like, well, what is the adolescent age range now?
That's right.
It's like 11 to 30.
That's right.
And climbing.
And climbing.
Which is a whole nother show and a whole nother topic. But we've been talking about a lot of different aspects. What should we expect? What are kind of the natural things that our sons are going through, which is very challenging, and their aggressiveness versus our aggressiveness, and mom and dad. and all of that, but it really helpful to kind of boil it down to kind of five do's and five don'ts as parents of these adolescent boys. With a great reminder, and Tate, you mentioned this at the beginning of it, teens have a desire for absolute freedom, and then parents, we have a desire for absolute control, and therein lies the rub, as we like to say. And for me, it kind of reminded me of Braveheart. Say of William Wallace, while he's having his entrails removed, yelling freedom because he wants freedom. He wants total freedom for the people. Right. And then the Crown and all of those guys want total control.
That's right.
And that's why they're on the field of battle with broadswords tearing each other apart.
That's right.
Unfortunately, that's exactly what can happen in our homes sometimes. So five do's, five don'ts. You want to start with the negatives and finish with the positives, or what do you want to do?
Yeah, that's fine. We'll do negatives first.
Okay, five don'ts. So these are five don'ts for moms and dads with respect to our adolescent sons.
All right, I'll pause after each one of these. So if you want to comment or question, you can do that. So don't freak out. Remember that. Remember the big picture that their brain is still developing into their 30s. So just don't freak out, right? So
and that's pretty much over anything.
That's right. That's right. Just take a calm, cool, collected approach. You'll be much better off. Don't meet aggression with aggression. Meet aggression with humility and assertiveness. Okay, so be assertive. But don't be aggressive. Don't yell. Don't scream, et cetera.
And I think that's one of the hardest ones, and I'm sure you see that a lot in counseling, that we fight fire with fire.
That's right. I see it in my own home, so I don't have to – I do. You're right. I do see it in counseling, but I know it's a struggle for me. I mean, in my family, the loudest person wins, right? So, I mean, that's just what
that's how I grew up.
That's how I grew up, and so I want to do that. If I'm not careful, if I'm not intentional, then I'm going to meet aggression with aggression.
And again, I think on that point, we need to be brutally honest and – introspective and retrospective about how we were raised.
That's right.
How we were parented. Think about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and remember that we have a tendency to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of us will say, I would never do that.
That's right. Yeah, most of us spent our early years saying, I will never do, and then fill in the blank, only then to turn right around and do exactly what we said we weren't going to do.
All right, so don't freak out. Don't meet fire with fire.
Yep.
Don't meet aggressiveness with aggressiveness.
That's right. Here's a big one, and we didn't really talk a lot about this, but I think it's really important that we talk about this, and that is don't take your hands off the wheel regarding technology. Mm. I mean, adolescent boys, they're going to get into all kinds of mischievousness, and technology is a really, really it's a minefield for them. And so don't assume that, you know, your good Christian kid is on the computer and reading Bible studies.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't take your hands off the
wheel. And we're talking about the obvious.
That's
porn.
Right. Porn. That's right. Yeah. Porn. All that.
Which is highly common.
That's right. It is very, very, very common.
I think the average age now, first time exposure to porn is down to 9.
It is 9. Yep. 9. And look,
what does that look like?
And look, use technology as your friend.
Sure.
I mean, I did this over the weekend. My son found this, he found this game online, and it's an auto mechanic simulator where, like, you take cars apart.
Oh, that's cool.
And he started doing it. He came in, and we were laughing because he was like, you know, I never knew that I knew so little about cars. I thought the spark plug went here, but it went in another place. And so it was just an interesting you don't have to be afraid of technology, but you can't ignore it either.
Like, well,
you've
got
to stay on top of it.
Again, you've got this – the teen wants freedom. The parent wants control. What does that look like practically with technology? Because – if once they get an iPhone, if you try to take that thing away or whatever, and you've got a major problem on your hands.
Yeah, well, we have some pretty strict rules regarding that. My boys have protected web browsers on their phones, and they have the restrictions on their iPhones are turned on.
Yeah.
So they can't add apps without my permission, and so it's and that's tough for a 15-year-old.
Sure.
I mean, he's got to text me, he's got to email me and say, hey, you know, can I do so and so, and then he's got to come find me, and I've got to unlock it. But at the end of the day, because of the minefield that it is, and because I have treated 15-year-old sex addicts before, it's just a risk that I'm worth taking. And I'm okay with their discomfort and embarrassment of having a protected web browser because I know how high the consequences are.
And should we insist that we have total access to their phone?
Yes. Yes, we should. And what I do is I just spot check them. Like, I don't have my kids come in every day and hand me their phone, but just at random times, I just pick them up. I've got their usernames, their passwords, and I go in and I search stuff. And if I find stuff that doesn't need to be there, then we start with having conversations about it. I don't freak out.
Don't freak out.
Don't freak
ballistic.
Out. Right. I mean, let's have a conversation about what this is and is this God honoring? And I just talk about, is this good for you? I mean, is this going to be good for your moral development?
Because we use a couple things, NetNanny, we use TeenSafe, and TeenSafe allows us to go look at all their text messages, including text messages that they have deleted, which has been helpful. Not always fun.
Yeah, that's right.
But certainly helpful.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's been a lot of times whenever I've not wanted to know what I now know.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's so difficult.
Yeah, that's right.
And so don't freak out. Don't meet fire with fire or aggressiveness. Don't take your hands off the wheel regarding technology. That's three. Two more.
Number four, don't assume that your teens aren't getting it. Don't assume that just because they're being angry and frustrated or they're laughing or not taking it seriously, don't assume that it's not sinking in. A lot of times we will just get frustrated over the fact, and I used this example before the show started with my boys last night. We're trying to do the 5-minute devotional. They think it's comedy
really
hour,
serious.
And they're cracking up, and I'm telling them they're acting like a bunch of hamsters on crack. And, you know, at the end of the day, though, I ask them a couple of questions at the end of the devotion, and they both gave really, really thoughtful answers.
Yeah, there you go.
And so, I mean, I could have just freaked out and been like, I'm so ticked off, and you guys aren't being respectful.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the important thing was is that they got the principles. And so if they got the principles, so what if they laughed?
Yeah.
So what? You,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? I mean, let's not assume that just because they're being boys that it's not sinking in, that the stuff that we need for them to get is not.
And the converse can be true because our daughter, who's 13, Caroline, will say – she'll just bring something up. And I'm such a teacher and I'm such a worldview person. And because of what I do on the radio, I'm always – my tendency is always to go into full explanation mode.
right.
So she brings up a little thing, and I just start, Dad, I don't need a whole lesson right now. I was just mentioning it. And I'm like, yeah, but this is such an important moment.
That's good.
And not every moment needs to be pregnant with meaning.
That's right.
You can lighten up,
Francis,
right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, fifth, don't.
Yeah, last one. Yeah, so just as parents, don't go it alone. Don't do this thing alone. One of the things that we have found that are most beneficial for parents of adolescent boys is if they hang around other parents of adolescent boys, because it normalizes, you know, they realize every single adolescent boy stinks. You know, every single adolescent boy struggles with remembering to put their deodorant on you know what I'm saying?
I mean, all
this stuff that's frustrating to them.
And be willing to share, be willing to ask for help.
That's right. That's
and be willing
right.
to pray, especially, so don't go it alone.
Okay, right.
Five do's. We got about 2 minutes and 50 seconds.
All right, I'll go quick. One, share control when possible, take control when necessary.
Oh, that's a good one.
Share control when possible. Take control when necessary. So give in when you can. Allow them to have some control and some decision making. But if you
got
to take the reins, take the reins.
That's
which jumps
one.
Into number two, function as your child's CEO. Right. So the CEO makes all the really big decisions, but he doesn't sweat the small decisions. Right. So if it's a really big thing that's going to get him into all kinds of trouble, then you step in, especially on things like executive functioning, things that are way down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where they really need our help. What they don't need is the help on the little bitty things.
Micromanaging.
That's right. Micromanaging. Don't do that. Three, monitor sleep and stress.
Mm.
Monitor sleep and stress, right? So they need sleep. They're growing boys. You need to make sure that they're sleeping, they're eating
right. Is there a medical kind of standard there?
8.5 to 9.25 hours is the norm. So they need between 8.5 and 9.25
hours. Could you be more
hours.
Specific?
Yeah, I just happened to read it in prep for the
Excellent.
Show. So
between eight and a half to nine and a quarter.
Right?
Got it, okay.
All
number
right?
four.
So number four, risk-taking is necessary, so encourage positive risk taking.
Mm.
In other words, give them an opportunity to be boys. You know, take your kids to a roller derby or a car, you know, one of those things where the cars crash into each other. You know, do something that will allow them to be able to express that side of them.
Okay.
And then number five, communicate.
Yeah.
I realize that when you have an adolescent boy in your home that they turn into monsters that grunt and mumble underneath their breath. I get it. But we have to communicate early and often with them. What we know about the teen brain is that it wants to connect.
Yeah.
It wants to connect.
Yeah.
Whether or not they realize
so
it or not, they want it and they need it. And it's our job to give it to them.
Would you say, just in closing, you've got about a minute, it sounds to me, as we've gone through all of these things, to getting through the teen years, the adolescent years with our sons, that it sounds to me like more of the onus is on us.
It is.
As
it absolutely. It absolutely
and it is on
is.
Them.
Hey, you know, I say this all the time, Steve, and that is in your relationship with your teenager, one of you has to be the adult.
Mm.
And guess whose job that is?
Yeah. that's so poignant and profound and convicting. And so I just don't want to keep talking to you but I think that's the reality of it.
Right.
And let's make sure we all share this particular program today. These are some tips and some wisdom that we all need as we try to raise our teen boys in a way that helps them, brings peace into our homes, and helps to raise godly sons that will make a difference for the kingdom. Tate, great seeing you today. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure to be here.
You're very welcome. Okay, friends, there you go. Another great theology. Theology Thursday. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. And God willing, we'll talk again this week.